the Pledge Our Power in episode 136.
You haven't just played two episodes at the same time. Me and Mimi, we were unaligned. We were like, who's going to host? Do you want to host? And Mimi was like, I don't care. You host. And then Mimi said, why don't we both host at the same time?
Yep.
And so we thought we would absolutely ruin the podcast for any audio listeners. And
we've already done that. Off to a good start. This is episode 136 of Pledge Our Valorant podcast. It's a podcast where we're platinum and we talk about Valorant and we chat about it. Today we're going to be chatting about the new changes and the team's going to Tokyo. Yippee! Mm. We have people here. Me and Brennan. We have Wyatt back. Noted Sunday game worker.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big deal. Just to brush off my first Sunday game. I mean, you know. Also, for added context on the intro, that wasn't planned either. Mimi just said, I know exactly what Bren is going to do for the intro.
Yeah.
And just knew that he was going to make the silly sound.
The silly sound.
Just actually read him like a book.
Read. We also have special guest Slinky, who is becoming increasingly less and less special every week.
It's true. My special's worn off after like the fourth episode. Just regular now.
Yeah. We should preface this by also explaining why we are so lazy, right?
What do you mean?
Because kids these days don't work as hard.
Is it?
Yeah,
people don't work like they used to.
The plan was to do a big Giga episode where we recapped all of the playoffs for every region. And then we realized we've just worked 5 10-hour days. And
yeah, I mean,
some of us have been to a wedding and some of us have just flown back. So we don't have the hours to actually physically catch up. Sliggy is going to be talking the entire time. about this stuff. What do we decide? We're just going to basically cover NA.
No, Sliggy's going to talk for the next 12 hours. It's like a lecture hall.
Let's do a TED talk. Yeah, so the plan, we're going to talk about NA today. We're going to cover like the finals and the conclusion of EU, and then talk about the APAC stuff the following week and get more into doing like the pick'ems and player top 10s and stuff. For today, we're going to do a whole lot of recapping of the stuff that happened in the past weekend, giving our thoughts, opinions, and hot takes. But yeah, as Bren said, basically got there, worked 5 days and left the next day. And every day is like around 10 a.m. call time to like 7 p.m.
Basically, we don't care about Pacific.
There's just not enough time. There's literally not enough time to watch the other regions.
You guys are on the money in the comments. We don't care about Pacific. We don't care about Brazil. Every North American player is better than Aspas.
I agree.
What else? What else would annoy people if I said it?
100 Thieves would have won Tokyo if they made it.
Yeah, 100 Thieves would have won Tokyo if they made it. True.
Yep.
Okay, now that we've
but
cleared
we're
that
gonna
up,
do that, guys. For everyone, before you start crying about your free entertainment, next week we're doing like we're gonna do like top 10 players. We're gonna do pick'ems once we know the bracket.
Did we
explain
we're
gonna do
it?
The
whole
Japan
know?
Thing. The people know. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we explained it.
I wasn't listening when you
why I was talking.
That is fucked.
That is fucked
Whoa!
Up.
No,
oh, wait.
No more money.
Oh,
no more money.
Dude, I keep forgetting it's over a minute.
Guys, if we have an episode.
5 minutes now?
If we have an episode where someone doesn't swear, we'll talk about Pacific.
Every time. Every time. You're all taking turns as well.
Dang it.
It was Bren last time.
It was me last time.
Now.
Dude, all right.
Sideshow was the last time.
I owe Matt
Mr. Well.
X a $5,000 fine now.
let's start by not talking about esports. And let's talk about new patch. Yes! There was a new patch on the PvE. And the shorty finally got nerfed. Thank God for this happening. But the question is it a big enough nerf? Let's pull up the patch notes. Besides the shorty, some other things got changed. A little chamber buff, some viper nerfs, changes to run and gun. So some pretty substantial stuff. It's a pretty big patch,
It is a decent patch, I would say. I think the shorty probably isn't enough, but it's a start. It's definitely better than what it is, like what it was before. And I think we've reached the end of it. We saw so much this season, just everyone, just at any opportunity having a shorty. So it's good that, I just don't think it's enough still. It's still relatively cheap. I think people are still going to be buying it, but at least it hurts the money a little bit.
To me, I feel like this is just like It's just going to encourage people to... This just makes, like, the half-armor meta even better, in my opinion. Because they didn't really change much about the gun. The damage fall-off is slightly adjusted. The damage step fall-off has changed from 7 meters to eight over six. I don't really know what this means. I'd have to, like, go into the server and feel it out. But my take is, like, the biggest adjustment was from 10 reserve ammo to 6, which I don't think changes much. And the damage fall-off changing slightly. Unless this is more substantial than I think, I feel like teams at the top level are still just going to be buying half armor and buying shorty, because half armor saves you $400. If it's still $300, why not just continue to buy a shorty if it's still good enough to work, like when you're in a Omen smoke or like in a close range quarter, which is when teams use it already.
Yeah, you got to take into account as well that this is in the same patch that they're nerfing the running gun as well, because that might make a difference. Like, part of the reason the shorty's kind of fucking crazy is that you're seeing jets like glide in the air and one-tapping people, like on lane on ascent or something. Like, it's a crazy gun when you really see like jet players min-maxing it. But maybe with the run and gun changes, they wrote a big explanation somewhere in the patches in here, but that seemed like the most interesting to me.
Yeah, it might be. I was hoping that they would make it cost at least $350 to begin with, but $300, I guess, is kind of close.
They changed
row pack accuracy. Oh, really?
Above row pack. Are they just trying to make the game less silly this patch?
Yeah.
More fun?
This is the CSGO patch.
Yeah, kind of is. It's
removed bright colors.
Just normalizing it. All the crazy stuff we see.
I just really hope that they get to a point with the shorty where it's actually a decision whether or not you want to buy it. I'm not convinced that it's at that point with this change, but I think that's the ideal place it needs to be in. Even if it's still essentially as powerful as it's been in terms of the actual weapon stats, I think that's okay as long as you, as a player, are often going to be in a situation where you have to sacrifice something if you want to invest into it, rather than it's just no question, can have it whenever you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My thought for a shorty change was that maybe it could be that even with two bursts, it would do like 125. Because right now you can full burst if you hit all your pellets. Someone who has 150 health. And my thought was like, okay, if we're going to nerf just the damage, even at point blank range, make it so you need two pellets versus someone who only has like, say, 125 health as like a further incentive and a further risk reward to like the light armor strat. Because I think that's another, like, the two biggest economy things right now is that I don't think there's a big incentive to buy full armor in a lot of rounds unless you are a Saudi oil prince 5 rounds into the game. And there's also not really any incentive to not buy shorty every round. And I think 300 starts moving towards that, but I still feel like half armor shorty is probably still going to be very relevant. And I just want to see the game in a place where there is a risk reward to those economic decisions more so than there already is.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think you're right. I think there isn't much for on the light armor and the heavy armor at the moment. So something like that would be pretty cool. At least it's a change. So at least we get in there. It feels like it feels like we need an extra step, but the first step's pretty good. I think the frenzy is a big nerf as well. They changed the frenzy quite a bit, so maybe in pistol we won't see it as much as be as dominant. And also against like this is what especially Fnatic, they were buying this against like armor a lot of the time for like their low buys. So I wonder if that kind of changes anything as well.
I think that the frenzy is crazy at LAN. Which is why so many people were buying it more, because, it swept through a lot of the NA teams. I think it was a lot of Brazilian teams just started buying it.
I think it started with, like, Loud was buying, like, 5 frenzies every pistol round, and people were like, hold up, frenzy on LAN, goated, and it's just continued to spread.
NRG have been doing that for a minute, and NA too, like, forever. They just always, they're one of the teams that likes to prioritize, like, getting... I think frenzy armor a lot of times on Victor on pistols when he's entering.
Yeah, raid boss.
Yeah.
Sick. Let's talk about some of the other little changes too. And we can kind of keep this quick. There was the frenzy changes. There was also some agent changes that happened. I think the first one to note is Viper. Obviously, Viper has a really big place in the meta right now with double controller being so prevalent. And the change they made was to fuel regeneration. They made it from taking, for regeneration being 5 seconds of your little bar coming back every second that your stuff is off, to now 3.3. So almost the 50% decrease there, which means that it now takes from 20 seconds to 30 seconds to recharge, which to me, I don't know if that'll necessarily change Viper's prevalence. I think it will make it a little easier for teams to like find the timing of when the gas is out. Okay, we hit the site. It gives you a little bit more margin for error. More than anything, I also see this just making like Viper still good, but just more annoying to play.
Yeah, I think it's quite a big, it is quite a big nerf, really. When you look at it, I think that is a lot of time. But I think it's like what you're saying, it's just going to be maybe a little bit easier to call and just be like, right, we know this is going to, this smoke's going to be down for a longer time. We don't have to wait for this one way as much. I think this is a good nerf though. Like Viper is, it's getting anything to kind of get rid of the Viper Harbor spray fest that we're starting to see in my books is good. Less clutter around. So Viper is very strong, is a very strong agent. So I think I'm so fine with this, but I do think it's a big nerf. I'm not sure if it's going to change too much. Maybe you'll see some, like, I don't know. I don't even know what you see. Like an Omen played more instead for one ways. But Viper's still, it's still legit. It's not like it's completely killed the agent. I think it's actually probably a pretty decent nerf in terms of the size of it.
I think it just puts her in line with some of the other controllers a little bit more. Because her cooldowns are pretty ridiculous. That you would just have like both of your full smokes back up within 20 seconds. When everyone else, it's like 15 seconds to just regenerate one of your pieces of utility. So I don't think it'll shift the meta necessarily, but I think it is a good direction for the game.
We talk about the pull changes. Us talking about the Viper nerfs just reminded me of that.
No.
I don't think we talked about
that. That happened in the middle of like America's going on, so I think we forgot to talk about it.
I'm so happy it happened.
Yeah, the pull changes look very good. I'll try and find a link as well, so we're not just...
Yeah, try and find a link. I'll talk about Chamber for a bit as well. I think this Chamber, I think the Chamber buff is not too bad. I actually think, I've always think that people have like overlooked Chamber. Like I still think that it is kind of viable in some of these maps, especially if you have like a Yay or someone who's outrageous on it. So I think this is a good incentive for people to start using again. It wasn't too big, which is great. I think, honestly, I kind of love this patch. I think it's one of the best patches we've seen in terms of just a general...
Yeah, it is quite good.
Equal out. So, yeah, the chamber stuff's pretty decent. We might see it a bit more. Again, I still think the chamber's just unreal. Any agent that can get a kill and get out in a tactical shooter is just like, it's just crazy strong. So I'm glad that this nerf, this buff isn't massive. And it's just like a... Hopefully just a small one. I think the instant equipped out of the teleport is kind of nuts. Like just instantly having your gun out is kind of crazy. But
yeah, there's no more adjusting of the tie.
Yeah, so you can't really like dive on him or whatever. Just screwing the tie and just getting the gun out. So yeah, I like it. Again, I think this patch is sick.
Yeah,
do you guys think that could be a little overpowered with having no pull-out time anymore? Like, I feel like there's some room for silliness if it is like actually instant of you just like putting your teleport. I suppose there is still the teleport time. The audio cue still gives you like a second to turn and check. But that seems like it will be really strong.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't get dived on, right? So it kind of, any counter that you kind of originally thought of just like finding out, you know where he's going to TP to and just like instantly jumping on him, I just don't think that's as viable. I kind of want to see what it's like as well. I don't know if there is like still the animation or whatever. So
does anyone know, does the tour de force firing rate increase, does that put it in line with the AWP now, or is it faster than the AWP? Because previously it was way faster than the AWP and now it's slower. So I just can't remember how much they
was it slower than the AWP by.
I'm like 90% sure it was. Because I know that because when Bala plays it, he rants about how shit the ult is every time he pops it and how slow it is. So every time he pops it, he starts going off about how his ult is worse than the AWP. So regardless, it's at least, I'm imagining, putting it in line with the AWP now, which is... I feel like a significant buff. Again, this is going off of Ball's pure rage when we played together, and he still locks Chamber.
Yeah, we actually can't stream when he's playing Chamber because he just gets unbelievably angry. The world isn't ready to see it. So hopefully they free Ball now. I think those are the biggest changes in this patch. Map updates, Pearl is disabled.
Dude, is that the octopus that turns angry in the background, Mimi?
Oh. Yeah.
On the left? Yeah, or is that like
it's Neon's octopus, I think.
Oh.
In the little controller they made. This is like
that's
her little
crazy.
Friend.
Crazy.
And I think Riot sent it to me. I know Riot Games, me and John Ryder.
I thought it was the one that you could like you could turn inside out so people would know when you're upset.
Maybe you can turn
I don't think so. I'm gonna just tear it in half.
Update cannot turn it.
I put the poll changes in the chat as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that quick, because we missed that. Is Pearl saved?
Well, it did
they
come
did
out
these
between,
changes.
It was only a few days ago.
Yeah, this is pretty recent. To the audio listeners, what's changed for Pearl is, first off, back halls has been made deeper, and there's a little bit of a lip on the left side. So it's a bit more of a 50-50 angle if you're kind of scaling back halls. There's now this corner on the left, mm-hmm. as well as deeper on the right. There's also changes, if you'd click forward, to widen, I think... Is that a wider choke point, Heaven? Yeah, so it's like kind of the little platform when you're walking out of Heaven is now slightly wider than it was before, which also means the pillar where that little sign is also wider, so maybe a little bit of an easier place to hold than it was before. I think there was a few more changes, too.
A lot of changes.
This one.
On the tweet above it.
We scroll up, yeah. The box that attackers used to play from in the post plant that had that really cringe slant that every Viper player would win a clutch from now doesn't have the slant anymore. Instead, it has this box in the middle that you have to jump up on instead of being able to just kind of move back and forth on the slant. I think there was one additional change.
Yeah, and the box to jump on is pretty small. So, like, if you're a retaker... It's fairly easy to expect where the peak is coming from because it's really only in the center as well.
I would say the change is pretty akin to what they did in Icebox like last year, where it's like now it's like one little section where you know they can be peaking from and the height's mm-hmm. a little bit more predictable. And then I think they also changed to the screen at B-Long that every Viper would put a little gap in the wall behind and people would hide in. Instead of being super tall, it's now about like... 2/3 height, so just tall enough to cover a player sitting behind it, but I think just slightly too tall to be able to jump peek it. Now there's two boxes you can jump up on behind it, so you don't need a movement ability to get on top of it anymore, and there's an additional bit of geometry back there, which I think is unspammable. So there now is a section of that where you just can't be spammed.
Yeah, for sure. I love this. Like, I straight up love this. I think with this change, the best thing is as well that now I'm pretty sure, like, an Omen Smoke or an Astra Smoke will actually cover both the edges from, like, left to right here because it's thicker. So that's, like, one of the biggest changes for me. I still think this map's shit. I think that makes it a little bit less shit, for sure. So I'm happy that they've looked into it. At least now you can stop the plant from happening, because before it was just, like... It's too hard to stop the plant, and then the after plant was too strong. I still think the after plant's gonna be incredibly strong, but now at least you have a chance to be able to stop the plant. So yeah, it's a big plus for me. There's also places it actually looks like a hard site to hit, to be honest. So it should be pretty hard with like all of this and how to clear it. Might even change some of the agents you see, to be honest with you. So I think this is going to be a good switch up for this map. So yeah, I'm super happy. I've been the biggest hater of B. I think it's the worst site that I've ever seen in a game. So I'm just super happy that they've kind of taken it on board. And yeah, I like the changes. I think it's good.
Do you guys think this could make solo controller viable again on this map? Because pretty much everyone has moved to the double controller comp. Seeing the solo Astra like we did last year is now very, very rare. But like you're saying, like one smoke can probably block off long now. I think one smoke can still block off heaven, which might make the B site a little bit easier to scale. It seems like there could be an argument that this might actually shift the meta on this map.
Yeah, I'm in for the argument. I'm definitely in for the argument. It feels like maybe as well. It's one of those ones you gotta wait and see. I would definitely test it out if I was in a team. Like I put that out there. I'd test out like an Omen or just an Astra just to at least see now.
Yeah, definitely. And I still am curious about how the map might play if they pushed the actual plant zone on B back a little bit.
Yeah.
So it was tougher to just purely play spam all the way out from long. But with these changes now, if they did that, I think it would probably be insanely defender-sided at that point. So also I'm curious to see how this plays out, though. I do like where they're taking it.
Yeah,
hopefully we see some more mid and A main action. So I think overall, just the last week, they've kind of nailed it in my mind. Everything's great.
Riot Games, good updates. All right, now that we've gotten the most exciting part of the podcast over, patch notes discussion. Yes, I'm sorry, but we have to move on to the boring stuff now. There's only so much fun that can be had on this podcast. Henceforth, no jokes. Let's talk serious. Evil Geniuses, holy shit. They're going to Tokyo. They're top three in Americas. They end as the second best seed, which is just a ridiculous run out of these guys. They went from being the funny team to now being very good.
Yeah, this is freaking crazy. I mean, that first win against NRG, I think, was the most impressive game of them all for me, possibly. The calling in that game was unbelievable. I on Split, especially the second map, I just couldn't believe how well on defense EG were rotating their setups to just perfectly nullify everything that NRG were attempting to go for into the late rounds. They just, it was insane. They were just better than them on all fronts, and then Demon One just took it over the top by winning out a bunch of late rounds with like sick 3Ks, 4Ks. But it was just a beautifully called game as well. They were just so ready for NRG's game plan. It was insane. I'm just always so, I'm so impressed by NRG's split towards the end of this stage, that for me, that game was, I just couldn't believe it. EG were fucking unreal, freaking unreal. And they, I mean, it's been like an hour now, right?
It's been an hour.
So, yeah, you're fine.
yeah, I was blown away by that game.
That game was incredible. And then they took from beating NRG to then going into this Cloud9 game. And honestly, for me, I think this is the most shocking game of America's throughout the playoffs. Because I came in thinking that, like, okay, EG's in form. They just outcalled NRG, something we didn't expect to happen. They're changing their comps in the playoffs and, like, showing some actually just really good ideas. Even when they lost behind NRG, they had some, like, great gimmicks and little things on that map that I was a huge fan of. And I thought that, hey, they've made this run. I don't think the depth is going to be there against a team like C9 that has just looked incredible all season. And then Cloud9, it felt like the classic NA narrative. There's always one team that we think is God's gift during the regular season and then show up to the playoffs and just make you sad. It was version one, it was Ghost Gaming, and now this season
it was EG.
It was EG in the past,
in
yeah.
Two as well, yeah.
And now it's Cloud9 who just kind of gave up the Ghost. It looked like the pressure got to them. The Fracture map was, first off, I mean, really well played to EG. But then Bind was just like, it was a 13-2 where Cloud9 was just like swinging three players into Demon's One crosshair and everyone was just gonzo. It didn't look like them. And when Potter came back and was on the desk with us afterwards, like the first thing she said to me was just like, did that game look as easy to you guys as it looked to us? Like they were just shocked by what happened. And I was too, but it now brings them to Tokyo.
Yep. Very cool. Good job, yeah. EG.
It was like, for me, it was the ultimate, for me, it was like the ultimate not fearing to lose game, right? You always hear teams talk about this and playing like not to lose, where they're kind of playing scared. But EG had already pretty much been out. They kind of accepted that MIBR weren't going to beat 100 Thieves. So they had already accepted that they weren't going to Tokyo. They had to do Lost Dance Qualifier and that they were out. Then they kind of got the second life. You could just see that they were just playing no fear. Everyone was playing their own game. I mean, they beat NRG when NRG won 6 out of 6 pistols. Like, that is unheard of. Like, they actually banged them out. They wrecked them. And then they go against C9, and C9 melted. It was just the biggest difference of C9 looked so scared to play their own games, especially the new kids. Like, the new kids have been doing great, but the new kids looked really rough on this one. They looked nervous. It looked like they didn't want to, like, take the risks or anything and didn't want to die fast, didn't want to be the reason that they lost. And EG are just out there just doing everything crazy, playing with full confidence. And it was, it showed. It was a big, was a big C9 crumble and an incredible performance from EG as well. I thought it was cool when you were talking about Potter as well, just saying how, because they played them near the end of the season, so they had all the ante on them anyway. I didn't really think about that. So that was sort of like, that must have been so good for them.
Yeah, having three times in 1 week.
Yeah.
They played them at the end of the regular season, at the beginning of the playoffs, and then at the end of the playoffs again.
And to re-put that point you were bringing up, so what's more, she said she felt like the first time that they played NRG, it was just all them just crumbling and not playing to their game plan. Honestly, like what we saw from Cloud9. But from what I was watching, when you think you're going to lose and you think you're out of playoffs, you're watching MIBR versus 100 Thieves, and MIBR has been really bad all season. 100 Thieves has been looking better. I think you already go through that idea in your mind. You already process it emotionally that, hey, we had a good run this season, but kind of fucked up at the end. We needed to beat NRG the first time. It didn't happen. We're out of playoffs. It's Jover. At this point, we just watch. We take a deep breath, take a week off. We're going to come back stronger for LCQ. We're going to make it then. But then you get this second chance. And I think emotionally, you've already processed that you've lost. You've already thought in your head that it's over. And when given that second chance, that second opportunity that you never thought you have, it just lets you play with no inhibition.
Yeah, it's
just fully go crazy. Realize that, hey, whatever we do now is already surpassing our own expectations. So let's pop the fuck off. And so that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly what you were saying, Sliggy, about the playing not to lose rather than playing to win. And you have a team like EG where it looked like they were reaching their peak in terms of their communication as well. That was one of the big things that was missing when you watch this team in the early regular season matches, was they weren't communicating well. Like, there was individual ideas. Players are on their own on an island sometimes when they're hitting sites. Like, they have hesitancy with their ideas of what they want to call, but everybody was on the same page. The calling was really good. And it all came together with the Demon 1 special as well. Because, it's all well and good if you're all communicating, playing well together But it helps a lot if you have an absolute crackhead Jett player who's just going to be winning unwinnable rounds for you as well on top. Like, that is the cherry on top that is just going to, it's going to sail you to so many more wins as well. So,
yeah. I think honestly across the board, a lot of the individually, not even a lot of, I genuinely think all of the players started, and perhaps it's because also their team play and preparation was so effective that it made all of the individuals look so much better than they had ever looked at any point in the season earlier. Calm really started finding his footing. He was winning crucial clutches. He was playing a great Sova. Yeah, dude. And I was blown away by how good Ethan was in the playoffs. I really think this is the first time I feel we've seen Ethan be so consistently top level. For a long time, his name value outweighed his actual performance in Valorant, but he was on another fucking level in the playoffs. He looked amazing individually. He was having tons of high impact kills. He was setting up his teammates excellently. I'm sure as well in the communications, his experience behind the scenes adding an immense amount of value there as well, which is something that Potter spoke to. And in that game against Cloud9, there were little things he was doing that I think were crucial. On that bind map, when they started defense on round two, they immediately took advantage of C9 not having any kind of sentinel. They just pushed out of B after winning the pistol and flanked C9 in market while they were gathering up for an A hit. And just immediately on round two, you don't need to push all the way down on an eco, but it was the right timing, and they instilled the fucking fear of God into Cloud9 immediately. They're just concerned. These guys are psychos. They're flanking us on round two. We're on an eco. And it's just the little plays like that that just continued to apply the weight of the world that Cloud9 already felt on map one. When you could just see the desperation in their plays just going for walk pushes that were really haphazard. Yeah. Calls like that that in the regular season, they weren't making, you know? So, again, just blown away by EG across the board. They stepped up their team play. It made everybody on the team look better. Just overall, Yeah, amazing showing.
But now they go into Tokyo without Demon 1.
Yeah.
Which is the biggest thing, right? Because
that's what I want to bring up, too. Because, like, if you watch that game versus C9, when they won, he was popping off looking great all the time. And then that winning moment, when you see everyone else hugging each other, reacting, popping off, he just, like, was just kind of, like, staring out into space and looked so sad. Like, I think the realization hit him that, like, we've done all this for my team. We've made this incredible thing happen, and I don't get to be a part of it. And to his credit, he went back for the rest of playoffs and popped off and played really well for the remainder of their games. But now there's a lot of questions about not just how will EG do at Tokyo without him, because they've confirmed now that they're working with Reformed, who was on the roster last year and is a part of their reserve roster now, who was, I believe, a controller player back then. To be switching over to Jet and slotting in for Tokyo, which is going to be obviously like kind of the biggest step up that he's had since the last time he played Tier 1 was last year in North America with EG. And I mean, even for Demon, he was tweeting out some like sad stuff. Like I want to pull up the tweet here because he tweeted something along the lines of that he was like kind of proud of the team's accomplishments and all, but that was just kind of it for him. Like, he seemed very unsure of his future. Here, Kurt, I'll send you this tweet. So there's questions for him of like, what is next? He tweets, "So I guess this is where my run ends. Sad face. Couldn't have asked for a better start for my first professional experience.
Going to Champs.
Happy with the progress we made as a team and what I'm capable of. Not quite sure what's next for me, but thank you for everyone supporting me." Which had me very confused because
he's
going
to Champs.
Yeah,
dude, what, his team need to be picking him up then if he's feeling like this. Like, I don't know. Masters is a short stint in that, you know, the team's going to be playing, you can't go, whatever. Unlucky. Maybe EG management should have, like, forced you to get a passport. I don't know what the fuck the problem was, but, like, that's just also ludicrous to me that he got picked up and the first thing he doesn't get is the passport. Not his own fault, but also just like, I don't know, anyone at EG just...
Hey, this is just PSA real quick. If you work in esports or you are a competitor at all, go fucking get your passport.
Yeah, just get a passport.
Go fucking get your passport. I know way too many people who, be it pro players or like talent or anything, that have like been offered an opportunity or qualified to something that they had no expectation of getting, can't do it or almost can't.
It might be more complicated than that because he's Russian, right?
I believe
he's Russian, living in the US.
I don't know what the case is for him, but just if you can get a passport. Passports are cool. Okay, continue your point.
Anyway, my point was that I was having an argument with Josh over this, over what EG should do at Tokyo. And I'm curious as to what you guys think. Mm. Josh's argument was that...
Dude, he was
they should,
on one, but go on, sorry.
The best team possible at Tokyo. So literally, maybe not even including your current roster that you were running to make it all the way. Because right now, their current plan is that they're going to be just plugging in Reformed in that Jet role and playing as normal. And so I thought that was the best way to do it, because that way you're still practicing, you're still developing as a team, and you can just plug and play in Demon 1 when you get back from Tokyo, and all the learnings, you can just literally catch him up very quickly. Josh's take was that you should form from these 9 players the best possible team, a completely new combination, whoever the fuck, whatever knows, and then just make the most of it in that little microcosm of the event with just a brand new team, because you can't play with Demon 1 anyway.
He's trolling.
I think that's a bit of a troll take. He's not here to defend himself, but I do think he's here to attack him.
And I'm going to pop off and say that he's fucking trolling. Because the what made this roster good isn't that they slotted Demon 1 in and Demon 1 is great. What made him good is that Demon 1 is a fantastic Jet player who is great in his role, who they slotted into a system that worked well. What has defined this team, I think, is what we've already been talking about. Ethan stepping up as an individual player, the calling from Boostio looking like better than it ever has been before for this team. Calm as an individual, making these huge, huge jumps in his performance. Jajimo being willing to take this role change and switch things over, be flexible for the team, be more of a voice for a team in a new role than what he was doing last year, to be able to fit this Jet player in so that they could work into the meta where solo Jet players is so prevalent. And I think that just works still. if you slot a new crack jet player in. I think you just have to find someone who can one-for-one switch that role, play with them for Masters, and then when you get home, you catch Demon 1 up to speed and you bring him back.
Yeah, and I think there's so much time in between the end of Tokyo to Champs. Like, they got Last Chance Qualifier and stuff. Everyone's fighting for that. You don't have to worry about that. I think, I agree. I think it's a bold take for sure. I think, I'd much rather just slot someone in. Be the underdogs, have no expectations. You can kind of do what you used to do best, just
strut
the team. Yeah,
if I was honestly, there, I'd be treated as a holiday. We go to Tokyo, we're not screwing once. We are fucking going out every night. You already know.
You should be there, coach. Just tell them, guys, we're going to go
take
get
this one off.
Fucked
up. Any team I'm coaching, the vibes would be good, I'm telling you.
I found this sick izakaya. I know our match is tomorrow, but we're going dummy
crazy. Guys, let me
take
you to the place where I got robbed about a year ago.
God, I am surprised, though. I just kind of assumed they would bring in Screwface. I don't know if he can't go or what's going on there, but he's a jet main. So I just thought they would bring him in.
He's
I don't
also
know if there's something
really
I'm missing,
good.
But...
Yeah, that's what I thought, but who knows? I mean, honestly, at this point, Potter knows best, so it's just...
Yeah, listen, I'll buy in, but it just seemed like the obvious thing. But that, I suppose it doesn't mean it's the best thing, but...
I want to pop off for a second real quick. This is on a different thing. But this team got more shit from the community than I think most other teams who were struggling did. There was a funny team that people thought was the funny team in every league. And I think that maybe besides K-Core, this team got the most like criticism levied against them of their offseason decisions, of Potter as a coach, as a whole number of things. The community was very harsh, and the community is able to do that. I mean, you're people on the internet. You're bound to be stupid. That's your job. But the thing is that this squad has proved that in not listening to the idiots on the internet, like you, dear viewer, who we love very much and you should become a member.
I mean, that's also us.
Yeah, it is us. It is us.
Because at the beginning of the season, for very good reason, when we saw the fucking 9-player experiment roster,
but we climbed on
in the past. Yeah, of course, because that shit doesn't make any sense, and it still doesn't make sense. I mean, they have stuck with like essentially a stable 5 since then. So
I think the thing I was referencing more so than ever was people who were particularly just like fucking thrashing Potter on the internet for like the BCJ decision and things
silly,
like that.
No?
But just like, don't be silly. Give teams time. Sometimes a roster needs time and it can become pretty good, as this one is evidence. When you give players, even if it might not be the perfect roster, time in a system and let it cook, you can become very good.
Take notes.
It does matter. Not just have the most clouded friends. Yeah, it's the exact opposite of Sentinels. EG, no clout, didn't make really any roster changes besides the BCJ swap, stuck to their system. It worked. Sentinels changed everything. Did not work at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think C9's a good point as well to bring, back that up as well, where it's just like, it doesn't really matter about the names sometimes. It's about everything that you kind of put in. Yeah, impressive. Just impressive run from EG. I didn't see it coming. Just shout out to all the players, everyone in that kind of team. I think they did great.
Well, let's take that as an opportunity to move on to a team that we expected to make it to Tokyo, but had a way harder run than we thought they'd have to have. After falling in the first round to EG, NRG complete a crazy lower bracket run all the way through to qualify to Tokyo, but do fall flat 0-3 in the finals to Loud. It was a very
really
close game.
Flat,
yeah, falling flat, I'm instantly taking back those words, because those were three incredibly competitive maps where I actually expected NRG to win after how good their reads were in the first half of the set.
In fact, I think NRG should have won.
I think they should have won.
I think Loud got lucky.
One and two in particular. Oh,
what?
No.
I just love the idea of basing the Brazilian fans, because they are so fucking passionate. They're so passionate. And some of the responses I've seen from the Brazilian fans recently have blown me away. Just by how ludicrous they are.
Come to Brazil.
I've been to Brazil. It was a lovely country.
You gotta come back.
It was a great country. Will I come back after that comment? Probably not. I will not be going back to Brazil, probably. No, I'm kidding. But Loud are a very good team. But we're not talking about Loud right now.
Let's talk about NRG. Lower bracket run. very impressive out of them. In the playoffs, they completely kind of redefined their style. We thought their style was going to be going back to what worked, playing the default comps, playing the roles that make sense. But in playoffs, they shift that narrative again. They steal Furia's comp, beat Furia with their comp on Haven. They steal Cloud9's comp, beat them with their comp on Lotus. They add new things to the comps that they already did. It's just, honestly, the most classic Optic core run imaginable throughout the entire season. We lose the first map. We go dummy crazy in the lower bracket. We prep heavily against every team, steal their shit, and beat them with it. It's just like, it's the perfect narrative, honestly.
Yeah, it's what they've done before. They ended the season heading into playoffs looking like the best team and the best called, or like best led team. The IGLing was the best, in my opinion, heading into this postseason. But when it came down to it against EG, they got out-prepped, out-called, and they went on a good lower bracket run. And again in the finals, Loud just out-called them again and had excellent... the new stuff that they brought to the table with the bind comp, especially compared to the previous time when they played Chamber, they just had... A lot of new stuff to show with that. And it got to the point where NRG were really relying on a lot of hero plays in that game. Overall, though, still very impressed with NRG. They still did very well. But other teams just stepped it up to a new level in the playoffs. Overall, yeah, still impressed, though.
Yeah. I think... Yeah. Go ahead, Sliggy. My brain's fucking empty.
That's okay. I was gonna say I still have like high expectations for them. Like it's still felt for me like after the EG game they were just still rising up. Still think the Louds having the double ban as well towards in the final, I think helped them a lot. They got 5-1s in terms of pistols. Like Loud's pistols are so good. I don't know who's coming up with them, but like every single time they keep coming up with new pistols. I think it's Les is doing this thing where he buys like a, every single time he always buys like a Frenzy and then he has a Shorty to back it up afterwards. So he like baits them in with the Frenzy and then switches to the Shorty. Exactly.
By the way, he stole that from Bala in our Premier Games. That was our set piss around. Bala was doing true. Frenzy Shorty backside. Les was watching our VODs.
I see. That's where it all came from.
Just have to credit who came up with that, which was Bala TW.
Yeah, so maybe Bala's responsible for all of their pistols. But I mean, NRG, I think they're looking good. They, man, especially Crashies and Victor, I'm very impressed with them and just how consistent they've been. Crashies has just been like crazy consistent.
Unbelievably
clutch
consistent.
In everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I am very much looking forward to watching this team in Tokyo, though. Because I think that there was an interview that they did where they were describing, you know, we had our comps that we were playing on specific maps and we were good at those comps, but we knew they weren't the best comps. For example, like they seem to believe that the double wall comp on Haven is, you know, the best comp, but they hadn't had much practice with it. That was pretty evident when you watched them play Haven.
So they played 2 scrims against the guard and got shit on in both of them before playing it the first time versus Furia.
Yep. And then they played against Furia and whatever. I mean, very, very close times, but if you give this team a little bit more time, I mean, well, we don't have much time before Tokyo. It's like a week. So, I mean, teams are going to be flying out. But I do think that with a bit of extra time as well to refine some of those comps, you might start to see another uptick. Because on an individual level, I thought Artist was playing really well in the playoffs. And same with Victor, actually. Victor had a bit of a downturn in his performance. I can't remember if it was at the beginning of the playoffs or the end of the regular season.
It was against
EG.
He went crazy on the first map on Haven as Killjoy, and then the next two maps he was struggling. But
since that point, though, he was playing really well.
And at the end of the regular season, he ended, I think, being like top 5 statistical player in the league after starting really slow.
Oh, he was in God mode. I mean, when they beat Loud in the regular season at the end, he dropped like 27-9 on Split, which was a map that then Loud got to ban. Also, what you were saying, Sliggy, the two map bans were crucial. They got rid of Split, which looked amazing for them. Totally shut down Ospus on that map. And they got rid of Pearl, which they've played 3 times against each other, and the NRG core won all 3 times. So they were just able to get rid of 2 maps. They were struggling heavily to beat them on. Got to play them on Bind, where they had a bunch of wacky shit with the Chamber that they weren't prepared for. Was shutting them down on defense. Sadok was just, he owned showers, and then when the sides flipped, they were punishing FNS hard. They kept picking him on short. And to shoot them more bail, heading into the finals, Loud played 90 rounds, and NRG played 270. I mean, they were playing so much more than everybody else that they had to be fatigued at that point, too. I mean, you know, at that point, they've shown off so much of what they're doing. They're playing a series every day for their lives to try to qualify. It's just, then they're playing a BO5 in the lower bracket the day before. It's just so much Valorant. And meanwhile, Loud just kind of, you know, they breezed their way through the upper bracket, got two bans, which they deserved because they were incredible in the playoffs. But that still is just a massive disadvantage for NRG mm-hmm. at that point. So also a lot of bail to shoot for them because I think their peaks this season were fucking incredible. I mean, I still have them they could be a Tokyo finalist to me without a doubt. So
yeah, I think we mentioned this earlier as well. It's like, there's so many teams at the moment that could win Tokyo. Yeah. It's really exciting. And yeah. I feel like after what I've seen, NRG are definitely one of them. It's it's like you're saying, just all the factors against them. Loud looking really, really good. And yeah, just it is a brutal format. You know, when you go down to the lower bracket, you definitely have the disadvantage. I mean, like you said, rightly so for a reason. So I'm excited. They look good. Like all the players look good. Did get a little bit ropey after the EG game for sure. Like they didn't look great in that game. A lot of like individual mistakes that I saw personally. But they definitely pulled it together. I'm impressed. I'm looking forward to Tokyo for this team.
Can we talk about the best team in the world?
Why do I think you can say a random team?
I just wanted to say quick before we move on. I think people will look at the 0-3 in the finals and be more disappointed than they should be. I think just to give a little bit more credit to this team, I think their Ascent in particular, they had really good ideas on their defensive side in the way they were calling. I think they were out calling Loud for most of that half, honestly. They had like that new kind of like Shark Attack variant where they had like the Sovalt round, which like perfectly timed when Loud was going for a fast B hit. They had a couple rounds where they were like stacking heavy A with the idea to funnel into Artis's operator, and then Loud would just commit into sites and get utterly massacred. But Loud is really good at just like finding that round and using it quickly to recover. And they were also so good at fixing kind of the gap they had versus EG of letting players get these deep lurks on them. They were super consistently able to punish that with the really good like fast extremity control on Ascent. And on the other two maps as well, well, I thought there were some great ideas from NRG. Loud just continues to look great. And let's talk about them because they win America's
best team in the world.
The team that. Sure.
Best team in the world.
Best team in the world, baby. Brazil number one.
Let's
Vamos.
Fucking go! Woo! Get Asmas! Vamos! 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 De Asmas! De Asmas!
I mean, this is actually. Dude.
Get Asmas!
I look, Brent. I mean, to add context, Brent is just never at his apartment. To his neighbors, this psycho just shows up once a week every 3 months, fucking screams and leaves again for three months. I mean, your neighbors think you're a psychopath, man.
Yeah. I haven't been back in 2 months.
The last time he was at home is actually when they have Shroud. That was the last time he was at home.
No, I did that in the UK. That was an iconic UK moment. But dude, Loud, holy shit. I any team that's capable of just taking it chill and casual throughout the regular season and then turning up to the level that they did in playoffs is fucking scary, because not many teams can do that. You cannot just flip a switch in terms of your own individual performance and then suddenly ramp it up again for playoffs. But they looked so much better compared to the regular season. Regular season, they were dropping maps every now and then. They were still clean, like they were still winning series, but they were getting pushed a lot more. And we were like steadily creeping into the conversation and topics when we were talking about Loud about, you know, is this going to be a bit of a downturn for them? Are they no longer that top dog team? Dude, playoffs, they were just different. They were different.
Yeah, I mean, they're scary at the moment as well.
Yeah,
they're all turning up again. I think this whole split is the best I've ever seen Les play. I think he's been a real standout for me personally. Like Aspas again, like we were expecting. It's expected now. It's his own fault that he's consistent and just top fragging all the time. Like that's what we expect. Les has just been so good this season, that just bailing them out of the rounds, winning important rounds, and just being like the rock for the team. Just everything about this team is good. Like they come up with new pistols every single time. They have new strats all the time. Like there's so many times where I'm watching it and I'll be like, there'll be like seven games in, I'll be like, damn, they got something new on this one as well. Like they keep bringing in new stuff. Yeah, so whoever's like thinking of a lot of it is yeah, it's very impressive. They're just a unit. Like everything they've done with the two new players is so impressive as well. It's so hard to actually get two new players to come in and keep up this dominance and make it like just continue from where they left off. Yeah, gotta be one of the favorites really. And I know a lot of people, I don't know, and I know this is like the classic of like saving strats and stuff, but honestly with how much they show and how much they keep coming up with, I honestly imagine they do have loads of new strats that they still haven't shown as well. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah, one of the funnest teams to watch, honestly, for me. I like their play style.
Yeah, they just didn't have to play Bind or Fracture until the very end, and then they just bring out two comps that no one expected at all. Aspas playing Neon back on the Raze, which has always just been a god on. That's what you said. You expect that from Aspas. One of the crazy stats with Les as well. I remember on one of during the BO5 final, Crashy said won a really crucial clutch, and I wanted to pull stats for clutch percentages to show how good he was in them. And when I got them, Crashy's was at the time winning 22% of his clutches,
which is really
Les
good.
Was winning 55%. I mean, what the fuck, dude? That's insanity. I mean, I couldn't believe. I'm like, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, dude, what? I don't even, he's winning so many of them. Like you don't even realize that he's winning so many of them. It's like, I don't even know when all those were happening. But it, like, I mean, it's, that is just outlandish, man. Mm-hmm. And his lurk timings are just perfection. On Bind, he was always finding the perfect window, walking up short, getting into U-Haul, catching someone off guard on Ascent. You can just see the desperation of the defending side to try and find him, like creeping through mid, going up cat late on an A hit, and he's just always on top in those situations every single time. He was just insane. It was good to see Tuiz had two really strong maps, the first two of the final as well, where typically he's just, you know, very much so in a more of a supportive role on the team, but he had stepped up there. Sodhawk had stepped up individually. His chamber was going stupid on Bind in the final, whereas in the first one, the crowd was going insane because he finally got a kill after like 9 rounds or whatever that was.
Yeah,
he was playing really well. The game plans were amazing. They just had it all. They were just playing at 11 out of 10. Just an unreal performance.
Less was IGLing, right?
Yeah, so that was the discussion I wanted to have first, because there was this Reddit thread that got posted. Let me try and pull it up for you, Kurt, about the finals, and where Sadak in the post-game interview basically said after he won the MVP award, because like you said, Wyatt, he was fucking insane. The chamber map in particular, he was so damn good. But then what ended up happening is he goes on afterwards and he says, I don't know what's going on. Don't feel like I deserve this. I played well, whatever. And then also was saying that he's been kind of teaching and trying to like groom Les to a point where he can also be an IGL in the future. And I don't know how perfect the translation is between Portuguese and English. Different people kind of interpreted this as like he was doing most of it. I think the more common interpretation that I saw was that he was picking up a lot of the mid-rounding, which to me would make a lot of sense considering the role that he plays on the team, particularly on their attacking sides. Being a lurker, he always has a lot of information for this team. And I think that's a really good thing for them. If they can have that second player to help Sadak out, to be really vocal in the mid-rounds, while also providing just the insane individual level that he's at, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, I think it's just like another it's just another thing that they can have to fall back on and rely on. It again, it's like you're saying, if you have someone that's lurking that is just knows how to IGL, can just work out the timings, work out the calls, and be like, give the information to the rest of the team, and isn't scared to just be like, yep, I have a good read into this, like, you all come back here or whatever, like, I've made some space. Like, it's so nice to see. So yeah, I wasn't, that's kind of like what you're saying, I wasn't entirely sure about the interpretation of how to take it, but no matter what, if you have two people, it's a bit like Liquid, where they have like Redgar and Safe that can both kind of do calling. As long as the chemistry between those two is good, and like they know, and like they both respect each other to a good level,
yeah.
So it's only going to be beneficial, and it just yeah, it just makes you harder to read as well. It really does. Like I imagine they're a pretty hard team to anti these days, but if that's happening as well. Yeah, and it's kind of crazy they're just using the split as just like a trial period almost to like get him up to calling it to a good level, and they're still dominating everyone. It's a very good sign. They're a scary team.
Huge credit to them. And also, I think we should have kind of the discussion beyond Sadok as an individual and as a caller. This is now like kind of the third generation of Brazilian players that he's brought up to a championship point. This guy has been in, I went back before the grand finals and looked at his history as a player. He only ever lost one VCT tournament in Brazil, one event. Every other time he has been at home winning events with young players around him. It went from Vikings into the first Loud era and now into the second era of Loud with Tui's and Kalanzin. He has stayed so incredibly relevant as an IGL to enable the young Brazilian talent around him to win tournaments, to go into international events and look insane. And I think that's just so impressive what he's been able to achieve, especially with them changing their coaching staff heading into this year, bringing in two new players, having to completely swap their roles, innovating a new meta. What Loud has been able to achieve just can't really be paralleled. And they're definitely a favorite heading into Brazil. Or yeah. Brazil. What? Where are we going next?
Tokyo.
Tokyo. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly what you said, though. Yeah. I mean, a year ago, Ospos was just farming on like a content streamer team as a duelist. And then at the time as well, Les was like known ranked demon, essentially. And they brought them in with the experienced guys. And now they're the experienced guys. And it's Guiz and Kauzin who are, you know, getting fully up to speed, acclimated to the top level, and they're there. I mean, they've done it. It's incredible.
It is. Let's move on, though, because that's the wrap for Americas. Those will be our three teams making it to the international event, but there are some names missing because there's only three squads. So let's kind of discuss who we think the biggest threat for NALCQ is going to be, because the obvious answer is Cloud9. They had an incredible regular season. They really stepped things up despite making the crazy roster change at the beginning, and everyone thought they were going to make it to Tokyo. But I think there are other teams that you could cope that will have a chance here. Furia is one that could try and make a return. Sentinels?
I think the guys, I think we're sleeping on Sentinels. We should probably talk about them for like an hour at least right now.
Yeah, so we have nine minutes right now dedicated to Sentinels. Wyatt, how can they win LCQ?
How can they win LCQ? By not making any roster changes and by dedicating...
Guess what, Wyatt? Guess what? They made a tweet. They said, everyone posts little sad emojis on their Twitter accounts. And we're like, oh my God, something bad's going to happen. And I guess what Sentinels tweeted? This is our roster. No more changes. My God, yes!
Bog.
That's
yes!
Crazy. My honest reaction to Sentinels making the first good decision since like signing Tens. My real and true reaction. Yeah, I mean, keep this roster. They've got outrageous talent. You saw it in the Furia game. At this point, they need to dedicate themselves to figuring out what their map pool is going to be, figuring out a bunch of, you know, variations of tactics on those maps. So, you know, they can
just
effectively play those. Yeah, because that was...
They just need time.
That was the main thing for me when we saw them against Furia. Obviously, talent was there, but they had no time. They were playing the very standard game. It worked because the talent was there. Now, you got, a month and a couple weeks?
Mm-hmm.
Figure out some good home maps. Get the layers to your game plan. boom. That's really it. I mean, that's what I mean. It sounds simple. Obviously, it's, you know, more difficult to actually do. But if they can do that, they've got a real shot.
You know what? Great work, guys. I'm proud of both of you.
No, I want to talk more about Sentinels.
No. You don't have to talk about Sentinels.
Please.
We don't have to talk about Sentinels. We had a few minutes. We fixed the SEO. Brent, they weren't even in playoffs. Tokyo's about to happen.
They're going to be in LCQ.
LCQ's not even... No. Let's talk about the teams in playoffs.
I don't care about any of them.
What about Cloud9? Cloud9 has clout now. They earn clout during the season. Can you talk about them instead?
I do care about them. Yeah, I can talk about them.
Go ahead, Brent. Talk about Cloud9 because they fell flat in playoffs.
Yeah, but the important thing was... Who was it that I remember we were building a segment on our desk segment, like on the day of this, and it's like, was it Space who said it? It was like, actually, it's Cope that they've lost now.
They are learning to lose.
Yeah, learning to lose. But it's a very important point because the parallels that we always draw to, and we've said this over and over again on the broadcast, because we know everybody watching this also watches the desk, and so they've, sorry guys, I'm going to be repeating myself here, because we know you've been paying attention during the desk segments, but... It is the guard. Yeah, it's always the guard that we draw parallels to because they ended up having their learning moment at Reykjavik and it was a big... ever a time to have
MC, of course.
A time to learn to lose, it's not at a big global event, big major global event. And so here in the playoffs, they get knocked down. Okay, fair enough. But I think they've got a good few weeks. They can watch the competition. They can really just like start to sieve and mold over the fact that, you know, they didn't make it there. They're not going to be playing at Tokyo, but... it's valuable to learn to lose like that because you think about the meteoric success that this roster had. They went from absolutely zero expectations, people ranking them into the bottom three teams in the Americas, to winning almost every single match that they played against in the regular season. Just actual unbelievable growth. And with two new players, not new players, but Rooney and Jake being relatively inexperienced at this kind of level of play, you need to have that downswing of performance so you can just learn from it.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about with the EG stuff, right? That you have to, like the fact that they didn't have even losing wasn't even in their like thought process at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas like when the two new guys were playing, you could tell they were literally just thinking like, oh man, what happens if we lose this? Like this is going to look so bad. And it's just all about just staying in the present. And pretty much the only way to kind of learn that stuff, like it's easy to say is to stay in the present. But honestly, sometimes you have to lose to just be like, right. I can't be thinking, can't be losing like that again, or even just accepting the losses, like we've seen it with like Fnatic and Liquid and stuff. Like, you only learn from losing, like, learn how to like deal with losing and just realize that actually it's not a big deal. It just means that it's just another chance that is going to come around again soon. In terms of teams that I want to talk about, I was thinking, do I talk about 100 Thieves or do I talk about Lev?
I want to talk about Lev.
Wait, that's what you were saying? Don't get me fucking started on? It was 100 Thieves?
Oh, yeah, dude. If we talk about 100 Thieves...
I'm thinking, don't get me started on Lev.
I'm liable to rant. I didn't know people had passion for Lev.
No, I don't have passion for Lev. I don't want to talk about them.
Oh, but Slingy wants to talk about them.
They're one of the teams that look good once they come up with new stuff and no one knows what they're doing, right? They become very predictable after showing loads of stuff. So a last chance qualifier is perfect for them. They got like 3 weeks, even longer. I think they got like a whole month to get ready for LCQ. So they'll have all new, brand new stuff. All the players are really good. As long as... they don't start saving at like a 2-2 situation, I think they're one of the favorites to win this. Like
they do it so much. Why are we saving every 3v5? Why are we saving every 3v5? They did it against Cloud9 on this map. Cloud9, their money was at breaking point. Leviathan had money to buy next round. Anyways, three players saved. Guess what? Cloud9 become fucking oil barons. They invest in an esports company. They're winning the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Why?
They're so individual focused. It's the entire ideology of this team needs to change fundamentally because I think owners instilled this entire idea of we're focusing only on our own game, we're only on the percentage play for us, and so they are very focused on that. They have their own ideas. I could not believe the one interview the owner did where he was like, "Yeah, we don't really believe in Counter-Striking as much. We think it distracts you too much from your own game plan," which, okay, to a certain degree, can understand where he's coming at. with that one, because I think then you end up like looking like EG did early on in the regular season, where they were so focused on their set ideas, really, really crazy ideas and set executes, that they weren't able to just adapt in mid-round and make good decisions off of that. They were so sold on their own ideas with that regard. So maybe there's some level, maybe there's something there. But in general, dude, counter-shotting is so important.
Oh, it's integral.
In the season. And they just weren't doing it all. Their ideas were getting ripped to pieces. Their defaults as well were just, there's just gaping holes in a lot of their defaults at this point that everybody knows about that were being exploited over and over and over again. And it's just insane. But it just all plays into the fact that the rant you were just going on about the saving, it's like that feels like something to me, like owner has said, guys, keep the guns. Think long-term. Just think about the guns. And they don't even consider the economic situation of the enemies. They don't even think about whether they're going to break the economy and it's going to be setting them up for success in the next few rounds. They're just only ever thinking about the one side of the equation. They're missing the other half. And so is you know, this week break that we've got and the entirety of Tokyo enough time for them to reinvent themselves in that regard, to actually start taking some risks? Maybe.
It's an easy fix.
It should be, right?
I will shoot owner a little bail, because I will be shooting the same bail to Mike. Earlier this year, it was like just before lock-in, the assistant coach left Leviathan, and my understanding was that he had a lot of influence.
He's been with them since he was with Crew at the Champions Run. Him and owner of like
So my understanding is he had a lot of influence on the in-game like strategical side, and owner has been alone this season. So I'm just gonna offer that bail to him, because it is real. I mean, it's relevant. It's extremely relevant. Yeah, you've seen how tough that's been for Mike this season as well. So, yeah.
And that's like the point of why I wanted to bring up like 100 Thieves and Lev. It's like they both suffer from this, and that's why the split is rough for them, right? The whole week of prep, like that's when you have three people against the one person. That was when it comes down to it. But like the actual last chance qualifier, crammed into a week, literally just like playoffs again. I think it's a really good format for these teams that just have like the one coach, and especially once you have the month off to kind of reinvent yourself. That's why I'm thinking that we'll see a better showing from 100 Thieves and Lev.
I think that really was well the issue for Leviathan. This is the first time, because to my understanding, LATAM last year was always a tournament format. Well, in North America, we had like, we kind of moved to something similar where it was like week by week. Actually, I think it was week by week for the last part, but for the most part, their competition has always been in tournament formats, and they've always been much more dominant at home, or at least it was just kind of like a two-team region with them and Crew, where there wasn't really many other squads really coming up to test them. So they didn't have to have as much like kind of they didn't have to, I think, deal with teams who would counter-strat and come back every week. So this was, I think, a very new test for a team like them. And I think they can learn a lot from it coming into next year's split. But I definitely agree with you, Sliggy, where I think that the tournament format is where this team thrives, when you can just kind of come in with a set idea.
Yeah, it's like what you were saying. Like, I used to love anti-strat. When Honor was in Crew, man, I used to love anti-stratting then. Like, our stats were crazy. Like, I would just look at everything and be like, oh, man, I know exactly what's going on for, like, this round, and this round. Like, it would always be great. So, yeah, I think, we'll see. Format. Dude, Last Chance Qualifier, I'm really pumped for it. I'm just as pumped for Last Chance Qualifier as I am Tokyo, honestly, because I just have... There's so many teams that can win either tournament.
I think the America's one will be probably the best. Like,
I think so as well. It's the biggest question mark of who the hell can win it.
Yeah, I also on the topic of Lev, those guys need a break. They seem, I know they have a pretty brutal practice schedule. I think mentally they've been struggling the last several weeks. Like, if you see like what Taco's posting and how he's been feeling, and with his struggles for a lot of this season, I think he needs a break. They've been making a lot of individually just so many small little weird errors that the players never would before, and I'm willing to pass that off as they've been practicing like fucking crazy. They're practicing until their eyes bleed, and then in game they're playing the worst that they have. That just looks to me like these guys need a break too. So, you know, I'd like to see Lev just, I don't know, get them five flights to Tahiti. Let him vacation for a week, you know? Like, chill on the beach for a little bit. Take your mind off the game. Just step away from the mouse and keyboard for a bit and try and come back renewed and just, yeah, focus up on coming into LCQ with new game plans. And they've definitely got a shot. They've got talent across the board. It just slipped at the end of this like the second half of this season. But I think it's slipped, but it's not gone. I don't not believe in the players on this team anymore. But yeah, they need a break. They need some time.
Let's move on from Leviathan, because I think we'll probably just be making the same points in a circle. Also, sorry to the video viewers. I was just fighting with my cat for mousepad control for that entire last segment. Anyways, is there any other teams that you guys are super compelled to talk about heading into LCQ, or should we move on to
Furia?
I mean, we should probably talk about Furia.
Yeah, let's give Furia a moment, because they're another team similar to Leviathan, super high expectations. Looked good at the beginning of the season, disappointed in the middle, came back just enough to make playoffs. We thought maybe they can be good in playoffs, and then fell flat when they played the better teams.
I mean, they just got little broed again by Loud. They just have a mental block against Loud that they cannot overcome. This game should have been... I remember saying, this game is 100% going to be closer than the first time they played. The map pool is better for them. They're not going to make the same mistakes with the map pick bans. And didn't matter.
They
still got rolled. And coming into this, they have similar good maps to Loud as well, but they just, on all accounts, man, there's a severe mental block against Loud that they cannot overcome. They were playing without the confidence that you see them play against or play with against other teams, excuse me. So that one, sure. And then they go up against NRG, and it was an okay showing.
NRG game was closer, right?
Yeah, it was like 13-9, 13-10.
It was like close, but kind of not really close at the same time. Like it was one of those games where it was like they had opportunities, but like bind NRG won. I think it was 10-2 in the first half for them. Like Furia just didn't really know how to comprehend with the bind, and then I think Furia prepped for NRG's old comp, and NRG just joined their comp versus them. And in my opinion, this was the scrappiest NRG looked in that one. Like they knew how to play the comp, but it was still like. They were making mistakes that they probably shouldn't have. Like, I think their post plants, it seemed like they were a little, like, off in the timings of, like, cycling the, like, post plant utility to stop a flood retake from happening with, like, between the mollies and the orbs and stuff. Like, it was clear that it was the first time they were playing it. And Furia still couldn't really take advantage, I felt.
They also got hard counter-strated on bind.
Yes.
Like, hard.
There's something that Sean said about that bind game that I thought was interesting that could certainly be true, which is that the last time they played bind, the sides were... or rather, it was Furia that had a crazy attack to start it off, and then NRG came back on the side switch. And Sean said something about how he thought that they probably just spent their time prepping for the other side where they failed last time. But in this game, it ended up just like they never made it to the side that they probably prepped for, where they struggled in the last game. So,
but good news, LCQ, no one is there to little bro them. No Loud, no NRG. They actually looked really pretty solid consistently against playing against the lower tier teams in the league. So we'll see. I think they also have the skill. They showed some good ideas. I think what makes this team really interesting is like their ability to like. Somewhat like innovate and try new things, like their willingness to do like this the Haven comp, the willingness to like try out the chamber, try out the double duelist. Like they really are cooking with some of the comps, but also they're just so explosive. Like Dujazin as a player is so willing to take like crazy risks to win this team rounds that I think makes them pretty difficult to play against. So I wouldn't expect them to win LCQ, but I think they are a reasonable like punt choice to be in the running for it. So we'll see how that one goes for them. And NA LCQ, that'll be coming up after Tokyo. But teams that are going to Tokyo, there's a lot of them from EMEA. And the first seed, this one might shock you. It's not Fnatic.
Liquid!
It's not Fnatic. Liquid have won, giving Fnatic their first loss of the year in the finals. That's crazy.
Yeah, and it was crazy. They did it from lower bracket as well, so they had to go against Nautica with the double map ban as well. And honestly, if I'm fully honest, I think it should have been a 3-0. I really do. I think it should have been a 3-0. Yeah, I think they should have won Lotus. They lost like a 2v4 or 2v5, like a 1v2. Like, there was just all of these rounds that they were just losing. And yeah, I just feel like it probably should have been a 3-0. Fnatic, I just don't think they... I don't know. Like, maybe they looked off. Like, they definitely looked off.
Wasn't Chronicle sick?
Maybe.
It's Fnatic? Probably.
I thought I heard that Chronicle was ill.
That's true.
But I didn't know if I was being baited by my Discord.
Yeah, potentially.
Someone told me. I might have been getting baited.
It felt like they all were. They all did look off, and then Liquid just took advantage fully.
He did say that. I'll send you the tweet, Kurt. But he tweets 1-3 against at Liquid Valorant. Unluckiest match for me. I got illness yesterday. I wasn't prepared for this match at all. But it's a good loss for us, and I'm sure we will come back so fucking strong.
T1 fighting. We will come back stronger. Does this worry anybody? Or
no, this is the best timeline.
Yeah,
that we're in now, because I was so worried that it was just going to be EMEA as a super top heavy region. I mean, the middle of the pack was always pretty close with each other, but if Liquid are now punching and there's going to be like a cycle of three teams where you've got Fnatic and Liquid and Na'Vi that are going to be punching up against each other, dude, that is fucking sweet. I'm not gonna lie, that is awesome.
It's asking is, does this worry us for Fnatic going into Tokyo? Because this is their first loss ever with this current team.
So basically, my way of looking at it is they tried to play the long con, and it didn't pay off just at the last hurdle. They tried to show nothing. They ended, literally throughout the season, if I look at what they were using at lock-in and what they did like the first 3 weeks of the season, I only saw them use two different things, and it was one entirely different strat on Ascent, and then a different bit of pathing for Durka. And that was it. Like, there was nothing new.
The only
they really
comp
didn't
change
want to show
was their
anything.
Split. Every other map, they played their lock-in comp. They have not played Harbor Viper once. They're still playing their old Lotus comp with, like, Astrophade Rays that everyone else has moved away from. They're still playing the old Haven comp with Breach Sova. Haven't tried Breach Guy. Haven't tried Double Initiator. Like, I'm going to be real. I don't think it matters that they lose. I feel like they've just been playing the big game of, hey, we don't have to show anything. We're just better than everyone else in the region. And it didn't pay off. So I don't think they'll get the bye in Tokyo, I think is what this means.
No, they do.
I think that's
fine. Yeah, they still
because it's
the top
two
in EMEA.
Wait, so you're telling me the final meant nothing?
To an extent, yeah. It's basically just for the trophy. That was kind of it. But honestly, like they all won the trophy. We don't have many of them. Like, especially when we had all the COVID stuff, there was no trophies going around at the beginning unless you were at the internationals. So it was a big thing for that. But yeah, in terms of Fnatic, not too worried. Definitely looked like a bit of an off day, but definitely just it felt like everything had come to an end of them showing everything. And a bit like what Bren was saying there, I just think it's I think it was you, Bren, it might have been you, Wyatt, in terms of just like it's not a one region team anymore, and I think that's just great. Like, Liquid look really good. They progressed throughout the season, and now it's
their
just like, yeah,
have blown me away actually for Liquid. Yeah, because you think about where they started. I was ready to write this team off completely.
I mean, I was like on the phone with Isik after watching their first
match.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just horrific gameplay, but the turnaround that they've had, I think part of this comes down to like the style of Redgar as an IGL, where he's very... I think he loves complicated game plans. And if you don't have like player quality, like people who are used to that setting, then it can be very hard to keep up with some of the stuff that he might be calling in a given moment. That's the vibe I get from them. But with enough time, they've now kind of like... It feels like they've been forced to keep up to the pace of which Redgar wants and the level of complexity, because... at the end of the day, like a lot of IGLs, they just end up going into a simple is good, because simple means easy to execute. You're not going to fuck up. There's not going to be gaps. But Liquid have always, at least this iteration of Liquid, have felt like the opposite of that almost. And it just requires a lot of time. But I mean, dude, they showed up. Safe has been looking phenomenal. You got like almost prime Nats performances as well coming out of him multiple times, which just incredible consistency that the guy's been able to do that as well for such a long period of time. But yeah, well deserved. If it means we now get another top team in EMEA, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for Safe on LAN again, man. Yep. Safe is so fucking good. Like, I watch this guy, and it's just unreal. And watching Americas, I was mad because our top teams are also Harbor Viper Pill. Loud in particular, Usbus played nothing but Jett until the playoffs. And it just was, it's so, like, he's so good at Jett. But it's so bedge. Like, there are certain maps where, guess what? Other agents work better, and you can try different things, and there are other options for compositions. And so I was super happy that Auspice was again showing his flexibility and the other agents that are so good during the playoffs. But what I loved about this Liquid team was just that, like, they were running the Neon comps early on Lotus. They're showing the ideas with the Rays in a lot of maps still. And Safe is just so consistently incredible on any of the roles that he played. Their only real, like, loss in the regular season was when they didn't have him to play with. I think they would have beaten Fnatic in the regular season if they had had him in. So this team really is the real deal. I think they're going to perform super well in Tokyo. Obviously, getting that buy into playoffs is huge for them. Like, what the fuck is that? Which was just on my screen. This guy's a pretty good player.
He's so good on the jewels. I'm so happy they switched. And, like, again, I think Yampi's a really good jewelist. But, like, in terms of when you just go to rifle plays, like, Safe is so good with a rifle. It's crazy. So I really like them on jewels. And when people like Redgar are this top, like, people, Redgar had so many first kills in the final. It was crazy. He had so much confidence. He was even pushing places on Fracture. Like, say he pushed Dish, and then he'd just take the rope over within the first 10 seconds, and, like, they just didn't expect it. Like, he was flowing with confidence. It was crazy to see. And I think it's a scary team when they're all flowing, like, especially Soulcast, when he's confident and he's like, has no pressure, and he's just like feeling himself. His first bullet aim is just insane. So yeah, I'm super happy for all of them. And it's been a long time coming, and always, like, Yampi and Soulcast have always been like the hardest workers out of everyone that I worked with. So yeah, I'm just super glad that they're looking great, and yeah, they could be a team that could win Tokyo.
I'm also happy for Soulcast. So I feel like a lot of people were kind of clowning on him in, like, the late era Liquid last year. People were saying, like, he was the guy to be dropped. He was the guy who wasn't performing enough. But he's always been such a fantastic supportive player. And like you're saying, like, he's just such a hard worker.
A glue player.
From what I've heard behind the scenes, also be pretty vocal in teams as well. So I'm happy that he's kind of starting to get the credit he deserves in this team.
The player that steps up and just plays whatever the team needs is always the first one to look like dog shit when stuff goes wrong. Like, you're not comfortable. You're not playing a role. Yeah, you turn into the scapegoat because you're the one who gets affected the most typically. But it's those players that enable the rest of the team. So
I do have one question about Fnatic for you, Sliggy, which is maybe the point of concern that you could kind of draw. Which is just about their map pool, because they played so few maps, which was somewhat similar to Loud, actually, where they didn't reveal a couple of their maps until the very end. But do you think that that's a realistic concern to have for the team, that maybe that could be a reason why in a BO5, perhaps, that they struggled because they don't have the depth and they were always just getting, like, a free win on Lotus or Haven from a lot of the series?
Yeah, I think we don't truly know. Like, because if they are saving comps, we don't really know how much they've been practicing the other comps and not practicing these. I know the mini leaked in my, sorry to publicly do this, but I know that mini leaked in chat as well on my Twitch that they have been pracking Pearl as well. So I know that that's like a thing that they've been pracking, and they didn't want to show it here as well. So I think it's not too bad. It's more, I think it's more of a question of just I have a few concerns. Bind doesn't look as dominant as, like, it used to look, and because Icebox is out, they don't have, like, that 100%, like, this is our map. And I guess it's Lotus, but at the same time, I'm not fully convinced. I know they've been banging everyone, but some of these games, are close, and, like, some of them have been like 2v4 bailouts and stuff like that from individuals. I have some concerns. I still think Alpha has a lot to learn. I still think he overpeaks quite a lot. It feels like it's still obviously he's an incredible player, but there is a few times where he like overpeaks at Anik or like cost them rounds and stuff like that. So yeah, I still have my concerns. I still think there's improvements for this team. But in terms of the map pool, I guess we just don't know. Like, it's like, honestly, I'm so confident that they're saving comps on potentially every single map that I'm just like, I can't really judge their map pool too much because I have no idea if they've been pracking it much or not.
For me personally, I find actually like this event, Tokyo, it's going to be really hard to power rank. We're gonna do that next episode for real. But like, I think a lot of teams were like saving stuff throughout the season, trying different things. It's like trying to place what is Na'Vi actually going to look like at an international event. Like, are they just going to continue with this like Yoru idea? Yeah. Is that real? Is that fake? I don't fucking know what to think anymore about this team. I'm so confused by them. Fnatic has been playing the same comp since the beginning. And then I look over at Americas and it's like NRG started by trolling, switched to like the very default comp, similar to what Fnatic is, just like the tried and true meta on every map. Then they started playing a lot of Harbor Viper. They try new stuff in the playoffs. Loud, on the other hand, innovate the Harbor Viper meta, play that basically every map through the regular season, and then in playoffs, switch things up, and they're playing Chamber, they're playing like this variation of the old FPX comp with the Neon on Fracture. It's just all out of all of the top teams, I feel like it's so hard to compare.
I think the EMEA 4 slots kind of trolled parts of the season, potentially. Or at least, not that it trolled parts of the season, it just made Na'Vi want to troll.
It gave them the flexibility.
Yeah, it just gave them the trolling stick. I mean, they immediately, they play foot, and they just go back to your... I mean, the previous series, it's like Cena... I don't know. They just go back to Yoru when it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they switch off the silly comps
like,
for exactly one game, and then they go back to the Yoru.
It's just... So I don't know what to think or make of Na'Vi until we see what they're actually running at the event.
I don't call teams out for trolling much, but they messed up their map VO against Liquid. Like, oh my god. I was looking at this, and we're going to a map VO, and I'm just like, okay, right, it's going to be like a Haven. Maybe they're going to, like, depending on what Liquid we're going to ban. I think like they had, like, three maps, and then they ended up banning Haven really early on, and I'm just like, how? And then you're picking Split, you're picking Liquid's best map, and I'm like, it was...
They did this against Foot as well. They banned Haven against Foot, and then they let Foot get Lotus, and I think Lotus looks like the best map for Foot.
Yeah, and it's,
it was really I think. Yeah, but also, I've spoken to Angel before, and the man, they love the, I don't know what it is, they love
to
treat official matches.
Story.
Oh, we've told, that story has been told on
I've told the Copenhagen story, but they love to treat the official matches as like a really refined period of practice, and they are so willing to troll their map pick ban sometimes because they have a really they think they have a really good idea of how to counteract it, and they just want to get good practice on a map that they're not good at. Personally, I wouldn't be doing that in the playoffs.
I do feel like they're just Yoru 3-ton training weight in half their games. I don't know, the map vetoes, the Yorus, like part of me thinks like the final Na'Vi is going to be like half those comps are real, half those comps are fraudulent. Because I think some of the Yoru stuff actually has merit and they can show some cool things. And I don't think they're going to completely move away from that idea. But I also think you got to change something. Like, because we saw that in their qualification game, they did move away from it. So I don't think it's real, but they're just so confusing. And this is exactly what they want. So it's fucking working, guys. Good job.
they might have owned themselves a little bit because there's four teams from EMEA. It means that no one from EMEA is confirmed for champs yet. But it's like the worst team from EMEA at Tokyo. So they actually have like a really rough route. They got to do better than one of the other EMEA teams. Two of them are already in the top eight. And they could be in a group where it's like NRG, DRX, and Na'Vi. Like, that could be a group. And that's kind of risky. It doesn't sound great. So, yeah, I'm a little bit worried for them. But I don't know. They also normally manage to pull it out the bag.
That is crazy to think that they could be going to LCQ. That there's a chance. I mean, technically, Fnatic could go to LCQ, but it's very unlikely that both of the teams in the group stage make it to top eight and then outperform the other two teams in top eight. It's very likely that one of Foot or Na'Vi will just go out in groups or something, and then everyone else will just automatically qualify through. But there is a risk of it. Like, you are taking that chance.
And whoever it is going to get wrecked, because everyone's been practicing for like an extra 2-3 weeks, and you've just shown everything, all of your best stuff, and then you go, what, not even a week, I don't think.
Yeah. And they'll, by the way, be the only team that'll happen to before LCK. Yeah, exactly. Not they being whomever is the lowest placing EMEA team in Tokyo. Every other team already knows they're in LCQ. Like, America's in Pacific LCQ, we already, like, I think the brackets are already, like, seeded. Like, we already know what's going to happen.
What would you prefer, Sliggy, if you were in that spot as a team? Would you prefer to have the full few weeks break to prep properly rather than going to Tokyo? Even though if you go to Tokyo, you get good practice against the teams there.
I would like to go to Tokyo because you still have the chance of like not getting into Large Slams qualifier access, so it's not set. But in terms of like doing a quick turnaround in a week, it's pretty much impossible. Like, they're going to have whoever it is. I don't think they'll win last chance qualifier. Like, whoever comes fourth out of the EMEA teams, I think, even though they are like on paper probably going to be the favorites, I think they're going to have the roughest time. Interesting. Really interesting.
That's kind of the end of our recap. There was one thing that wasn't initially a topic that I did kind of want to bring up on that quick before we do end the show. If you could, I just linked you FNS's Twitter account, but if you could pull up the most recent tweet from Finesse, please, Kurt. I wanted to bring this up quickly to talk about what we were just discussing, where it's like the fact that the format this year is really brutal. Like, I can speak to this just from like us working the show and then like having the turnaround times, not even having to like prep for like preparing to like Counter-Strike teams and stuff. But it's like your league ends, you have a week, then you fly to Tokyo, then you get home. If you're an LCQ, you have like a week, and then it's LCQ, and then you have a week, and then it's champions. It's so condensed that it is going to be extremely challenging for these teams to come in and like rebuild stuff ahead of things. Even between playoffs and regular season, it's crazy how fast the turnaround is on everything. And then it's just like a 4-month off season.
Yeah.
And if I can add on to that, not to mention all of the teams that are not living in this country, like they have to move away from home, live in like a team house, like away from their family, away from their girlfriends or whatever, and just deal with all this. It's got to be mentally booming.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, that's competition. I do agree. It's far too condensed, but I mean, hopefully next year will be better. I think they had to do it with the format this year just to be, guys, I'll put on my Riot shill trousers real quick and start explaining why the format's this way. But
Warper.
Yeah, it's because they wanted to kind of not have any sort of overlap, I think, with their other Riot ecosystems, with their esports in other games, which I don't know. Doesn't really make sense.
I think
to
what
me.
You're saying is basically like they didn't want thing. Valorant international events to run at the same time as Worlds or MSI.
Worlds, right? Yeah. So, sure, this is what we get. Next year will hopefully be a lot better because I imagine we'll have much more time to
and
start.
We get two splits, right? Because the locking kind of messed everything up because it was relatively short, like a month.
Yeah.
Where everything else should last for like a month and a half, and then you can have a Masters in there, so it should be like a bit of a spread out, and there won't be as much time off. I do think the thing when I look back at this format, playoffs for Americas and EMEA felt rough. Like it was all in the space of 5 days, where Pacific had like 3 days, and then there was like 3 days off and then 2 days or something roughly around that. They're like, they had a little split in the playoffs. Yeah. So I think that's a lot better for playoffs. And then the only other thing I would say is when they put Icebox out and put Bind in, there has to be a week off there. If we're going to do that, that's too much for teams.
Also, sorry to cut you off.
No,
unless
you
were done. Oh, okay. I mean, also, I think that was, I just don't like that decision. Either. I mean, that's just so troll. I mean, it's
brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's I just don't think you can change the map pool mid-season, mid-split, whatever it is. That's just got to wait until it's over. It has to be in the interim of events. 100%.
It's a hard format. It is really brutal for these teams. So, yeah.
This is year one growing pains, though.
Yes.
Mainly. And hopefully next year, with more time at the beginning of the year, it will be spread out more. And also, they need to work out a system with 11 teams because there's going to be one more team added.
That is going to be crazy to have to work out.
So how the fuck, what formats, what tournament system are you running with 11 teams? I don't fucking know. That is, that's hard.
But all of this is to say, it's very brutal right now. So give some credits to the players and for how short the turnaround time is, and also to your favorite podcasters, because we don't have much time to watch all the games, guys. Please be patient with us, because we really want to cover everything and give everything justice. But all of us who were working in America just landed from like a red eye flight yesterday, or for some of us today, to get home and try and do all this. So enjoy the free content that you have, because everything is really busy.
God,
okay.
Also, imagine though if they did. I mean, I was just gonna say, dude, if Icebox was still in though, would Fnatic just be too fucking OP?
They changed the map to nerf Fnatic.
I mean, they actually nerf Fnatic to keep the scene balanced. I appreciate that.
It's the same thing. They're trying to nerf Viper so they can nerf Loud. Guys, you have to please stop running Harper Viper. We need to nerf you guys. Please stop doing that. Okay.
I think.
Well,
sorry. Can I just add one more thing in? I just wanted to just quickly talk about the fact that whoever wins Tokyo gets an extra slot for last chance qualifier. I mean, that's pretty sick. I mean, that's gonna be pretty hype. And there's so many teams that could win it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's two LCQ teams for the winning region.
Yes. Yeah, so the winning region, the top.
I forgot about that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, sick, right?
Wait. So let's kind of think for a second. If that's America's, that means we could like hypothetically get like Cloud9 and like
Sentinels when they make the run all the way to the finals.
Sentinels. Yeah. Oh, we could get Sentinels and 100 Thieves.
Dude, everybody root for Loud. Everybody root for Loud.
Root for Loud. We need Sentinels and 100
Thieves. We are breaking viewership records. We are taking over this fucking scene. Esports is over. We are taking over.
Wait, we could get Carmen Corin Coy. Carmen Corin Coy.
Holy shit.
Spain and France. Vamos. Allons-y, Carmen Corin. I don't know which Pacific teams have the most caught, but probably two of them. Okay, guys, it's that time of episode 4.
Keon and Zeta. That would be, I think those are the two.
Yeah.
The Goop, we're off it, which means it's time for the last segment. Yep. It's Wyatt's Weekly Award.
Yep. It's Wyatt's Weekly Award. It's Wyatt's Weekly Award. And I'm in Texas. We were losing our shit recording that one.
Who's the award going to?
So this week, the award has to go to the winners, right?
Of course.
It just
of which league though?
Has to. It's going to the winners of the annual Gloucester Cheese Roll. The Gloucester Cheese Roll happened.
Wait, Brandon, is this
weekend.
Where you grew up?
This is my hometown.
It's
this is madness.
It's the Gloucester Cheese Rolling. They do multiple races. They throw a wheel of cheese down the hill and they chase it. And you win if you get to the bottom of the hill. That's it. You don't even have to catch the cheese. You just have to get to the bottom first. And so, free healthcare, baby. NHS. Lost the tradition. Once per year. Roll yourselves down. This hill is like a cliff face, by the way.
From Seattle, Washington.
Seattle.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, people come
people
from
flying
all
in.
Over.
One of the winners was from Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, how does he even know about this?
The winner of the third men's race was from Japan. It's a global event these days.
Yep. It's just
wait,
as global
there's a
as
men's
Valorant.
And women's cheese roll, is what
yes,
you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they do eat the cheese. It's wrapped up. You can eat the cheese afterwards. It's not a waste.
Good lord.
Dude, British culture is fantastic.
Have you ever gone to one of these, friends?
No, I've never gone.
Not even as a spectator?
No. I probably
can
should
we,
at some point.
Can we
yeah,
have,
really
like,
should.
Valorant Masters Gloucester so we can go see this?
Is there a big venue in Gloucester for Valorant?
We could probably host it at a sports center.
Yeah, you could just put the fans on the hill. If they're popping off, they can all roll down into the stage.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah.
And what's the name of the gentleman who won?
I remember hitting my head. I remember hurting, and then I remember waking up in the tent.
Yeah, and you're going to have to spend the afternoon in the hospital.
Yeah, I guess
so. You'll have more cheese. That's going to be all right.
Exactly. I can eat this tonight.
Jesus Christ. I mean, it is a dangerous sport. Is that the most dangerous sport?
I think it might be.
They stopped doing it officially, actually. It used to be an official thing, and too many people were getting injured, so that now it's unofficial, but people just show up anyway to do it.
Oh my god, this makes me think of, like, the Philadelphia rotisserie chicken eating guy.
I don't know what that means.
He ate a rotisserie chicken with his hands for 55 days in a row on an abandoned pier in Philadelphia, and it was the greatest spectator sport the city has ever come up with.
Oh, wait, I have heard
what?
About this.
Yes. Let me get you a tweet.
I'm lost.
How have you guys ever heard of the Philadelphia Chicken Man?
People went to see him eat rotisserie chickens.
Yes, on the abandoned pier by the IKEA.
Oh, there's a red carpet.
Well, yes, of course.
What?
This news station doesn't use video. Okay.
It's just images. Okay.
Yeah,
Mimi,
I will
take this thing home.
No, I want to talk more about the chicken.
I need to explain again because people aren't listening, but we are going to be covering Pacific at some point.
Yeah, we're going to do it next week.
We're going to do it next week. I said it was going to be this episode. I forgot that we were working fucking 10-hour days doing the playoffs and immediately flying back. So
no, once again, the real reason is that we secretly hate everyone that we don't like.
We don't like the regions. We just hate them.
We hate Pacific.
There's no other reason.
We hate EMEA, but we do have one guy who has time to watch EMEA that we keep bringing in. So we hate it slightly less than Pacific.
Yeah.
But we'll talk more
about
it.
Pacific, everyone.
No, we hate it too much. We hate it too much. Not happening. Nope. We hate it too much. We're not just going to be talking about Pacific, though. We're going to be doing a top 10 list of the best players going into the event, or top 20 list, whatever it is. We're going to be power ranking the teams. We're probably going to be doing predictions. There's going to be drama. There's going to be content. There's going to be cheese rolling. Rotisserie chicken being eaten.
Rotisserie chickens. Get a asbas. Vamos.
Vamos. I think we have to do the outro at the same time, though, Brent. Thanks for watching. Pledge at 135. Become a member.